Welcome to Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Sisters and other beings who may not have gender at this particular moment in time, I was due to have William Stillings. Oops, I've just kicked it. It's not a bucket. It's all right. I haven't kicked the bucket. It's a biscuit tin, in fact. It's an old biscuit. Anyway, like, it's just making a noise down there. I have been waiting for William Stillings to come online, and he's not. I think he's caught by daylight saving time, which I believe has changed in America today. I would love to open the lines, and I'd love to speak to Rebecca. Let's see if Rebecca's on the line, and we can go over some of the of our week's adventures. And see what's happening here. And Rebecca, are you there with me? Yes. There you are. Can you hear me? All right. Well, she's opened the phone.
I'm here.
Now you can hear me.
Yes, and you sound like you have got your echo.
So I have. Yes. I was doing an online open mic earlier on about an hour ago, and I left the reverb on. The audience can't hear it, but you could, which is probably why it was a bit strange. Let me just demonstrate. That's what Rebecca could hear me just now. So, that was very odd. Yeah. So good afternoon and good morning. Good morning. No, it's good afternoon to you still. How are you, my dear? What a week.
I'm lovely. How are you?
Well, I could be better. I got this blinding headache. I had coffee today for the first time in ages, and at the same time I had a chocolate roulade, chocolate mousse cake. And they're both absolutely divine, but I think it's, not having had any food first, I think it's hit me off. But anyway, I'll be fine. Don't worry about me.
Wow, dude.
So for once, it's not solar flares or cosmic waves. It's good old plain, far too much fat for the liver.
Understood. Yeah, sometimes we just have our own stuff that we have decided to add to the mix.
Yeah.
Of uncomfortability, right?
That's right.
You got to take ownership of it.
Yeah, as if it's not like enough to take on the weight of the world on your own shoulders.
There you go.
You know, as you do. Well, good afternoon, Rebecca. How are you doing? What's news in your end? I heard you with Ms. Muggsy the other night.
Yes, I had her on Friday night, quite delightful, as you probably heard.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
Just a wonderful, wonderful person, just extraordinarily knowledgeable in regards to, how the body really works. And I was just so thrilled with, sharing. I had done my own research. You know, I'd been doing a lot of research on my own over different things. And, then she comes on and talks about these things. And so, it was extremely powerful show. And as much as it really explained to people what kind of dis and misinformation is being spread about, this global planet globally about, medications and, what causes heart disease. I mean, all of this has been, you know, a very well constructed and delivered, I might add, campaign, I guess it were, against the health of the human. So she just was fantastically filled with just tons of information. Of course, she's made it kind of her mission in life, so to speak.
Yeah, she's got a very focused will, and it's lovely because she wanted to get somewhere, and she's got it. She's got to that place where she's, you know, she's now got a qualification that allows her to have authority both within and without. She had her own within authority, but she's also taken on the taking on authority from outside, i.e. doing a doctorate. You know, so she's got the name doctor there. So that's a really wonderful thing. And congratulations, Muggsy, for getting that. But what's really interesting, and this is part of the conversation that I hope to have with William tonight, and it touches on what you were just talking about. And this is the idea that what we have been told, or what we are being told by people in authority, i.e. doctors, is that these things do you good. And yet we're finding that using the attitude of traditional medicines and holistic medicine and adapting spiritual science, you know, this is like the science of the rays, the science of energies and frequencies, that what we're being taught and what we're being told is quite a distance from the truth. And this is what we like to talk about here on Wall Spirit Radio, certainly, is bridging the gap between the things that we're told, the lies that we're told, and the truth that we know does exist, because we know that there are people who enjoy the benefits of the other science. I don't know if there's any other word for it, but for want of a better term, let's call it black science. It sounds a bit, you know, it's like black operations, you know, it's the secret science that doesn't get taught to us in schools, and that's why we stay in the Stone Age. You know, we should be flying around like the Jetsons, yes, really. And yet we don't. And that's because the science is wrong. We're taught the wrong science, and we're taught the wrong medicine. In fact, we're lied to at every single point in our lives.
You know, as disturbing as that is, and it is it's extraordinarily disturbing. As a matter of fact, I've spent the last, I don't know, probably week, honestly, JP, in that space of expanding on both sides of the coin, which is, you know, the stuff that's been hidden, the stuff that you know, we've been told over and over again. And, you know, I touch on it a little bit on my radio show, but I don't ever sit down and just have this, you know, real enormous and compacted, if you will, discussion on all the things that, you know, I've seen, I've been shown, that I've, you know, found out about, I've done my own research on. And it's an astounding, premise here that even as it, that the humans that are here on this planet right now, that were even able to survive with all of the things that they have lied to us about, that is extraordinarily detrimental to the health. You know, they've been found out. And let me share with you what I mean by that. Found out. The dark cabal, the Illuminati, the extraterrestrial races, whatever, however, there's so many factions here, you couldn't even begin. That doesn't even touch the tip of the iceberg. Whose hands, quote unquote, are in the pot, right?
Yeah.
But the thing with Sandy, I had a private conversation with a friend of mine about this. And, you know, days before Sandy came along, you know, I got these pieces of information. And, you know, I call it my musings, because all day long across my forehead, so to speak, in my mind's eye, I get like a little ticker tape. And that's really what it looks like, a little ticker tape that comes across with pieces of information, just pieces. And, you know, nanotechnology, chemtrails, as it relates to those. And then I get a little bit more information about where to look. It's just a really an interesting thing I don't think I've ever really explained to people. I call it my musings, when really it's just like this ticker tape. It goes along all day long. And sometimes with it comes audio as well as the visuals. So Sandy comes along, and I'm directed to look at the weather. And I see, you know, I just know what my routine is, right? Quote unquote routine is. So when I'm feel the need or feel like I'm being compelled, as it were, to look in a different direction, it's notice what you notice. Why am I here? What am I looking at?
Yeah.
Why am I here? Why have I arrived here, right?
Interesting line of inquiry, because yeah, that's the way to look at yourself as an objective being.
Yes. So I show up on the NOAA website. I don't ever look at NOAA. It just isn't what I do.
This is the North, what is it, NO? North Atlantic Observatory?
Yeah, and then the Hurricane Center, right?
For all
hurricane,
right. So this is the thing that shows you the earthquakes and hurricanes of the world?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, yeah.
So there I am.
Okay, go on.
Now, this is first thing in the morning, and I've not even, you know, read any news. I haven't looked anywhere. I haven't done anything. And that's the first thing that I'm being compelled to look at, and first thing in the morning when I wake up. So I go and I see this storm building. I think it hit, Cuba first? Isn't that where it first arrived, was down there in Cuba area?
Yeah.
Someplace down there. And, you know, they talked about its projected trajectory. The projected trajectory, say that really fast, I dare you three times. Anyway, was that it would come up to Florida and then it would bounce off, go to the right, like it's normally supposed to do.
It's a modern storm, you know.
Yeah, it's a modern storm, right?
Takes right angle turns, just like modern airplanes. Yeah.
So I look at that, right. So I look at that and I go, okay, well, that's interesting. And a little bit later in that same very day, now Hurricane Sandy, by the way, hadn't even been talked about hitting the States at that point. There was no conversation, no net talk or any of that. I go back a few hours later and I look at it again. Now, all of a sudden, they've named it this, you know, Frankenstorm that is, and quote unquote, the meteorologist says, well, I've never seen a storm that's supposed to take a left-hand trajectory. Now, mind you, it hasn't even made it to Florida yet. It's not even hit the United States yet. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, oh, so that's the wrong picture. They had already known exactly how that storm was going to be manipulated. They already knew it. That means it was created.
Yeah.
There was a natural occurring event, and I talk about this over and over again. And as a matter of fact, my second book that I'm writing is on the construct, which talks about this very thing, which is taking a natural occurring event and hijacking on it and expanding it and then beginning to control and manipulate it, because they can't create it. So what they do is they use that which is naturally occurring and they enhance it to whatever ends or means that they wish to enhance it.
Yeah.
So
and direct it, yeah.
And direct it. So then as we're watching all of this build, I mean, it gets to be this big thing, you know, Frankenstorm, you know, the perfect storm is going to hit. And you watch how these people, and I'm telling you, and I wasn't the only one, you see, other people were going, maybe they didn't know, intuitively they didn't know, but somewhere they knew. They knew to look for it because they were like, something about this isn't correct. A hurricane doesn't make a left-hand turn, almost a 90-degree angle, back towards land. It doesn't do it. And if you look at the storm systems on either side, they were not strong enough to push that storm at a 90-degree left-hand angle to take it right back to where they wanted, which was in the New York and New Jersey and the East Coast. It was not strong enough to do that. But you can see where they chemtrails seeded it. You can see it. You can also, somebody had shown on, and of course now it's been taken down. It was taken down within 24 hours of looking at it, is a frequency that shows up. You know, they do these graphs in different colors so that you can see the different harmonics and the frequencies and, that are being recorded, right? And here was this frequency that was being recorded and they didn't know what it was. They just knew it wasn't naturally occurring. Well, that's what they suspect is HARP or some kind of a technology that HARP is using, a frequency, in order to also not only enhance the storm, but enhance the seeding, which is the chemtrail seeding, right, that will now become remote controlled in a sense. They can control this storm, how it's going to, where it's going to go, what it's going to do, and, you know, how long it's going to stay on land.
You know,
so
go on.
Go ahead, Noel, and that, you know, you, and so, you know, this has just begun this whole process of looking at things from, you know, different dimensional levels. I've, you know, started scouring the oceans again. I haven't done that in a long time. I've been, you know, visiting down in the oceans. I've been visiting in what's called Hollow Earth. I've been trying to step between the dimensions and look at what's going on there. There's so much activity that my little brain is just totally on fire. It's totally on fire, and I don't even know how to sort it out enough to even, you know, articulate exactly what's going on. But here's the scary word, dare I say it. You know, I heard this word, and of course I knew it already. I mean, I knew about this, but it just didn't hit home until this last week when everything that had accumulated with all this, you know, researching and these kind of journeys and travels that I do, is that the Earth is being terraformed. It finally made sense. What is the chemtrails? The chemtrails are a piece of the larger picture, which is the terraforming, which also has to do, obviously, with, or maybe not so obviously to people, I don't know, with the HARP frequencies, with the pharmaceuticals. I mean, in the pharmaceuticals, in our vaccines, we know that there's, besides all the rotten stuff they put in there, we know they're using nanotechnology. Well, this nanotechnology, is certainly not of the Earth, and it's way far advanced. It actually, each of those little bots, if that's the only way I know how to word them, the nanobots are really an individually controlled computer chip. And it sends out these little signals in the body when it gets there. Who in the heck knows what's triggering who to do what?
Exactly. And what frequencies that they're tuned to,
yes.
and what signal that they receive, you know, is it digital, analog, you know, who cares? But the, well, there's, I mean, God, yeah, sorry to say here, there's so much going on. The terraforming aspect, it's like, yeah, they're forming terror as well. But as well as, you know, they're making a planet, or they're trying to make a planet that is more congenial, to use William's words, to a different kind of life form.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you're getting to, aren't you?
Yep.
Yeah, so that the atmosphere is heavier and thicker and
less oxygen
and perhaps warmer, you know. They're trying to say, oh, the world is getting warmer. Well, you know, maybe it's going to be more conducive. Maybe they're trying to make it so that they can grow dinosaurs again.
Well, unfortunately, dear, that's already happened.
Uh-huh.
You know, Jurassic Park, it's already happened.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Honestly, it's already happened. Look
well,
at,
yeah. Actually, well, William was speaking about that as well. I'll fill in. I'll tell you what stuff he's been talking to me. I've been talking to him like almost every day for 2 weeks. He's been ringing me up in the middle of the night, and we've been having these three, four hour conversations, all sorts of things. And one of the things I'll just sum his what he's been saying to me up. But he was saying that on Mars, that's where they dump a lot of these experiments that have failed. They don't kill them, they just put them out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes you, you know, it just, you know, when we talk about a prison planet,
uh-huh.
right? Why do you think this is a prison planet? It wasn't originally intended that way. That much I can tell you. And there's, I'll talk more about that at a later date. But it became a prison planet because the resources were easy to get to. We were very malleable because we were a young race.
Mm.
We are one of the younger races, even though humanoids have been around for eons, right? I mean, the race itself is kind of old. It's an ancient race. But the human that exists here on this planet is kind of a new growth. Right? A new outreach of the humanoids. And this experimentation on this planet And it was supposed to nurture. It was supposed to be, we were kind of supposed to be given hands off. No one was supposed to touch us.
That's
we
right.
weren't supposed to be touched. We were supposed to be left. Yes, we were supposed to be left alone. The planet was prepared for us. And when I say prepared for us, I mean, it went through some cycles and changes and the dinosaurs left because it was all about, again, in a sense, it's about terraforming, preparing the planet for a different form of life that was going to be the, I guess you would call it the, top of the line life form so that it could have an honest chance to grow, to see what this species called humans could do without interference. Well,
and
we all know what. Yeah.
Who couldn't keep their bloody hands off it?
I don't know how many. Which ones do you want to look at? Because really, I'm looking at it right now, and as you're speaking, and as you asked me that question, they said over 100.
Well, that's more than Alex has said. Alex Collier says there's at least 22. So you're saying over 100.
Yeah. Now, maybe they're not direct, but they are still over 100. What would cause, here's the thing. You got these species out there that want to usurp and take over and control the human. Oh my God, look at those. Those are fresh meat. Literally. Fresh meat, clean planet. Wow. Pristine. We're going to be the first. We're going to raid them. That's against the rules. It's against the rules. It was against the rules. They broke every law there was to break.
So it's you know, the whole idea, they talk about the Garden of Eden. But that's what the globe was, the way a garden is. It was cared for. It was prepared and made. And then it was seeded. You know, you release your butterfly larvae.
That's right.
And see what they do.
And watch them grow and flourish. And, yeah. And then came the interference. And the interference came along, and that's why this is considered a prison planet, because it was put on quarantine.
So who started it? Who was in there first? Do you know?
There are three races that actually were kind of warring with each other. And honestly, these are races that I don't even know what the names of them are. They are not the familiar races everyone would like to name, you know, like the Anunnaki or what have you, right? These are three races that were kind of king of the hill, so to speak, very strong races that were in competition with each other. And within every race and species are mixtures. You don't find too many what they would call just pure races, even in what we would consider the extraterrestrial races, because all races are a mixture of some other race where they're all genetically put together. I mean, we're all DNA, so it's just about rearranging DNA and having it show up in a different form. It vibrates and looks differently and acts differently when you rearrange the DNA. Makes sense?
Yeah. So this is an interesting thing, the whole DNA business, because when you think about it, this is one of the things that they say, that we have... We're like a DNA factory of all this good stuff.
That's right.
Which is why they keep wanting to take our DNA when they abduct us and stuff like that. What do you know about that?
On what? On how we were structured?
I mean, because we... I mean, we work on many dimensions and you know, we're useful on many dimensions, but in terms of the idea of being a DNA library, which has been intimated that, we're a kind of genetic library for the galaxy.
We are.
What's the, you know, who thought of that? Do you know the background to that?
Okay, so I guess I'm still not clear. Who thought of what? I mean,
who thought
the
of
DNA
us?
Library?
Yeah, I mean, who thought of us of creating This is the Partal, isn't it? This is the idea of what Alex talks about, the Partal, the original beings who created the whole thing. Yeah?
Yes.
Am I confused?
You're not confused. I've talked about this briefly before, about the original blueprint. And each species and race has an original blueprint. In other words, the idea of genetic material to make up, to create a race that's going to have certain characteristics and attributes. Okay? So the ability to live on certain, in certain environments, to survive, to thrive in certain environments. And certainly many of the species that have been created, so to speak, by the, what you call the Partal, are not something that we're familiar with, okay? I mean, they don't interact, they've never interacted, but there are many that have. So in the original blueprint of the human, remember there's different levels of human. We have the humanoids, right? The ones that we resemble, but nobody looks quite like us because we are kind of we're the young kids on the block. And when I said that, I meant that literally as far as the blueprints was taken the very best characteristics and attributes for this particular solar system in this physics of duality to be able to survive and thrive, right? And to flourish. Well, we thrived and we survived, but we were also jacked with. So the original blueprint, remember that you've got, you know, these geneticists out there that are interdimensional that know, you know, they're probably 100,000 years, if not more advanced than what you could even imagine. I can't even imagine what life would look like 100,000 years from now. I can't fathom that. Not from my perspective as a human being. Can't imagine what we'll come to in 100,000 years, right? What are we going to look like? What are we going to act like? Are we even going to eat? You know, what is, right? So it's very hard to imagine what we would look like 100,000 years from now. So as this solar system is one of the newer ones in this galaxy, and it was put out onto the fringes for a reason, to be left alone. They thought, well, we're going to build this little solar system out here, and we're going to work on it for a while, and we're going to put the human on here. We're going to let the human thrive and grow, and it will become a race of beings that will be, you know, responsible and blah, 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 and all this. And of course, then the genetics got screwed up, tampered with. Mm-hmm. And let me reframe that. So, you know, when we look at the tampering, we now have pieces of all the other races in more of the negative attributes that weren't part of the original blueprint. But in order to create us, we had a lot of DNA from all of the other structures of other species because there's a similarity between us. Well, if you look, when it comes down to DNA, everything has DNA to it. It's the stuff that everything's made out of, if you want to look at it from that perspective. We've always talked about it in energetic terms. You know, it's the stuff that we're all made of. Well, DNA, you know, now the scientists are saying, well, you know, we find DNA out in space floating around. Well, hello, it's the stuff we're all made out of. It shouldn't be a surprise. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when we look at this original blueprint, some of the tendencies that the human has now is more pronounced than they should be. And I'm talking about the negative aggression. Aggression in and of itself isn't negative. It's how you enact that aggression, right? Warring, fighting, all of the negative aspects, which is the fear and the lack and all of that. That all comes from programming. That wasn't part of the original blueprint.
Indeed. So, we've been, let's say it's a bit like, you know, how they breed the Rottweilers to be nasty, vicious animals, is that they find all the genetic traits that that are vicious, and then you know, fix them into by inbreeding into creatures, and then they abuse them further, and then they you know, so it makes them easier to abuse, I suppose. And I suppose that's the same technique that they do with the say the super soldier program or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, here we go, and it's all about, you know, people messing with stuff and abusing their power.
Well, abusing their knowledge.
Yeah, which is power.
So. Yes, and it's, you know, what is it? Wisdom is only as good as the knowledge is applied. You can be a academic whiz kid. In anything, you can know all there is to know about a certain topic.
Oh yeah!
But that doesn't mean that you have the wisdom to apply that knowledge.
That's right. You might be a chemist and a physicist, but you might not know how to make a fire in a forest when you need one.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't want to make a forest fire, but you know, in the woods, you know. But anyway, so
no, not a good idea.
Meanwhile, back to many. Well, this is obviously like millions of years ago, but let's not talk about in linear time anyway, because it's about events and accretion and things. So there was this series of messing abouts, let's say, each one trying to claim or reclaim humanity.
Using us as, some of us use us as food, some of us use us as still slaves, kind of a thing.
Yeah, well, okay, neither of those have changed. Go on.
Right. and using us, and this is slightly different than being a slave, as being a worker bee. It's different. It's different. They're the ones that can carry out, because they're puppets themselves, they can carry out the insidiousness of the plans, whoever's plans that they happen to be under the control of, the mind control of, and do it right in the nose in front of all of the other peoples who look and act and are just like them. So they're a little different than the slaves. The slaves are the ones like most of us who have to go out and earn a living and punch a time clock. You know, we're the slaves. We're the ones that keep the little – we're the ones that keep our heads down and, you know, we're not really looking at anything. We're just, you know, going back and forth to work every day and, you know, doing our little thing and, you know, paying our taxes and being obedient to the laws and blah, 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 okay? That's the slaves. But then you have those that are kind of the overseers. And the overseers are enslaved themselves, although to ask them, they don't think so. They're the ones that are the ones that we call the dark cabal or the Illuminati, the human instruments that carry out the deceptive plans from all of these other races, right? Now, again, I have to tell you, there's not just one. You can't blame it just on the reptilians or the Archons or the Anunnaki or whomever, the Greys or whatever. It's all of them and then some.
Yeah.
There are, and I've said this for years, they walk amongst us. They walk amongst us. There are technologies out there that allow the interlopers, the ones that don't truly belong here, to intermix with humanity, and they, some of them hold positions of very high authority and of high visualizations. People, they're in the news, they're CEOs, whatever the case may be. But they are truly not human. They wear human skin.
They live amongst us. It's interesting. My girlfriend, Wolf Baby, was watching that this afternoon. It was a John Carpenter film. And it's called They Live, but it's really They Live Among Us. And,
oh, wow.
The guy has these glasses. Did you ever see this film?
It sounds sort of... I don't know about
all right,
the glasses.
Nutshell.
I don't
know. Nutshell. All right, he finds these glasses. He can see through the lies. He looks at a poster with a regular kind of brightly colored advert. He looks through the glass. It says, Obey. Looks at all the street signs, and they're like, obey, buy, greed. You know, the whole kind of like the 1984 thing. So he's looking at the subliminal, energy of it. And what it turns out is that there's a signal that is coming off the same transmitter as the TV station.
Yes.
So it's coming through the TV, folks. Yes, it's coming through the TV. Without spoiling the end, they find a way to prevent this overlaying matrix of perception. And in that perception, these aliens, or whatever they are, interdimensional beings, look like humans. You can see them, but when you put the sunglasses on, you can see this kind of skeletal, kind of outline there. It's like an X-ray. And so that's how you can tell who they are. And yeah, like you say, they're the CEOs, they're the positions of power. And those are this group that you were talking about, you're talking about, like, there's the regular tax-paying slave humans. Okay, this is the group that I give the Ray to Monad group. Okay, and then the other beings that you were talking about, those who are the drones and the minions of the powers that be they reptilian, gray, ET, they are the third Ray Monad group. So there is a kind of general energy that is about them. And there's the first Ray Monad group, to which you and I belong, who are here to probably just observe it out of existence, or just observe balance back into order, or whatever we're supposed to be doing here, watching it all happen.
Well, you know, I tell you, we haven't even begun to touch the tip of the iceberg over the uncovering of what the reality of our life really is. And here's what I think is probably the saddest thing of all. The saddest thing of all is the majority of the population, it's probably not those who listen to these shows, it is the majority of the population that will never know what the reality is of the life that they live. They may get a dose of it as far as, if everything, falls apart, there'll be a lot of exposure to a lot of things, but it will not even touch the tip of the iceberg as to how duped they have all been, and we all have been. I mean, I can't say I have all the answers. I'm not going to sit up here and do that, because that would be not a true statement. That wouldn't be a true statement at all. I only know what I know, and I realize the more that I learn, the less that I really, really know about really what's going on. The picture is so big, because it goes on in linear times for literally millions of years. Millions of years.
Yeah.
And so how could one, in a short period of time, put together all the little innuendos and all the little rabbit holes and all of the different interference, it's no different than a gang leader's. Let's talk about the 1920s here in the United States, because that's a pretty well known time for most people. That's when the gangsters, that's what they used to call them, was gangsters, were all about territory, right? And you had the gang leader, the boss, right, the big guy, and he would get to collect taxes, right? Collect money from all of the businesses for protection. To keep them protected, they would have to pay these gangsters money each week. So they would have his little minions would go out and collect the money. And if somebody decided they didn't want to, something would happen to their family, or their house would be burned up or whatever. So now you've also got all of these other people that work in this group. This gangster group, right? Now, somebody's not going to like the boss, and he's going to think that he's going to take him out because he's going to claim the territory for himself. So within any kind of an organization like that that you have, that's nothing but power, that rules by power, greed, fear, intimidation, you're going to have dissension among the ranks. Because there's always going to be somebody that says, I'm going to be king of the mountain now. This guy doesn't know he's getting old. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Whatever. He's, had the run too long. I don't like him. Whatever the case may be, why should he get rich for the work that I do? whatever is motivating them, there's always going to be internal wars in a situation like that, in a gangster mentality.
Absolutely. Domination.
Because isn't that what they're doing? So if they're doing it to others, you don't think they're not doing it amongst themselves? They'll stab themselves in the back more so than they would anybody else in their own societies, in their own groups.
Yeah.
Because it's about wresting control.
Exactly. And this is the R complex thing, and it's, control. And there's also an illusion that they can control things. You know, they are suffering under the illusion that they can control things. Perhaps they have hired strength. You know, they may have a bully boy, they may have an army, they may have a, but you can't still make anyone think differently. You can't stop a soul from expressing. And there are many, many souls. Right, so here's the thing, Rebecca. The teachings on the rays talk about how the ascended human is, right? Which is how we used to be.
Yes.
And there are certain arrangements of chakras and ray energies that match these chakras that denote the fallen human and the ascended human. And what happens is that once you've gone through the processes of reascending, then you move from that second ray group to the first ray group. Eventually, everybody on planet Earth should have the rays that you and I have, the 1, 2, 3 rays. This is the plan.
That was the original plan.
Yeah. But still,
mean we can't get back to it.
Yeah, the plan still applies.
It does.
And we are here seeding the truth. And so everybody, you know, people talk about, you know, do the rays change? Yeah, they damn well do, and it's going to happen. They really do. And you go through these initiations, but it's all about how easily you can let go of those entrenched ideas and ideals and shoulds and musts and oughts. The more you can let go of those, the more you can go up that bottleneck, because it is a bottleneck. It's narrow, and you can't go through with crystallized bodies. They have to be fluid and flexible.
Nicely said. So I'll add my 2 cents into it.
Go ahead.
So because here's what's, you know, I told you for a while here, I've been kind of bombarded with the different factions, what's been happening, et cetera, and so forth, which is not normally my area of viewing. Doesn't mean that it doesn't happen to me, but there's, you know, because we do live in a duality, and I can't state this enough, because we do live in duality, for all of this negative stuff that's going on, there is a positive of equal, if not greater, energetics out there, and information and tools and skills, etc., just as equal in its force, if you want to call it that, as that which we are experiencing of the dark cabal, the Illuminati, all of that. It is here. It resides within each human, because that was part of the original blueprint. Now, see, they can't change the original blueprint, but what they can do is they can energetically manipulate it, which is what genetic gene splicing and all of that stuff and all that scientific stuff, engineering is all about, is where they move around some of the sequencing, so to speak, of the DNA, or they lay dormant. In other words, they shut off the triggers to points of the DNA that allow the higher traits, so to speak, to be known to the individual, right? And so when people tell you, and I'm tell you over and over again, everyone has intuition, everyone is psychic, everyone is telepathic, because we are, because it was part of the original blueprint. It's still there. And all you have to do is awaken the DNA. Now, how do you awaken the DNA? Well, that's an individual thing. It's an individual process. You can't put everyone in one category and say, well, if you do A, B, and C and stand on your toe and count to 10 backwards 3 times, it's going to activate it, and that's going to work for everybody. That's ridiculous to think so. But frequencies, tones, and sounds, meditations, energetic ideas, allowing energy to flow, working with your chakras, is enough to begin to start moving those signals through your DNA to start clicking some things open. Click, 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 click them open. And then when they become clicked open, then you begin to discover that you'll have these little pieces of information come in here, or you'll go, I knew that phone was going to ring, or I knew that was going to happen, or, wow, I think that coffee cup just moved and I was just thinking about it. In other words, it will become what I call the organic experience, because it's part of the original blueprint. And there's not a great big mysticism to it. It is about not being inside the box, however, to discover how to reactivate or activate or turn on portions of your DNA. We all have the gifts, and even those that say they don't, that's okay. You do. It's just a choice on whether or not you choose to believe it and then work on trying to get it triggered. Trigger it open. Trigger it awake. Trigger it from out of the dormancy state into, okay, I'm ready to receive signals now. I'm ready to receive. What do you want to do now? It is that simple. Not easy, but it's that simple.
Mm, yeah.
Which is, you know, and I'm not plugging this, but I am plugging it to an extent. I do this Tarot class. I've been doing it since the early 90s. And, of course, it's been updated as, you know, language and skills and understandings have changed. So has some of the information in this Tarot class. It's not about teaching people to read the cards. It's about activating a remembering. It's about tapping in to those senses and awaken them, waking them up. And Tarot is a process that allows you to awaken up some of these senses that have been dormant. It's not the only thing, but it's one of the things that I use to help others. Meditation's another one. I mean, you know, you could maybe playing the flute or listening to certain music. Everybody's going to be different on how you awaken those points within the DNA. Reactivating them. Come on, it's time to wake up. We've been asleep for a long, long time. Time to wake up.
One of the things that that my teacher told me is that it's not one of the... All right, the way that the original human worked is through harmlessness, right? And basically, you know, imagine that you were supposed to be looking after the place and you got called away, or you were distracted and somebody came along and messed up your garden. And then you find that they're still there. They're squatting in the garden. And you need to, you know, put your garden back into order, really, because, you know, that you're on a job and these are rare orchids and, you know, whatever. Our kids. Interesting. Anyway, so here we have these rather messed up children, and they've been turned nasty, basically. We've all been turned nasty. We're not supposed to be this way. We're supposed to be harmless. And what the powers that be do is they do everything that they can to make us harmful and harmful to each other and to ourselves. You know, we're encouraged to war with each other. We're encouraged to hate each other. We're encouraged to be jealous with each other. We're encouraged. All these negative emotions, I believe, are not natural to the human being.
They aren't, not to the original blueprint.
That's right. and these have all been imposed, and then they employ people, so-called experts, to say, oh yes, that's just the human condition. Don't give me that, Tut.
Yeah, oh, well, that's what they want you to believe, so that you just think that this is just a natural way of being. It is not natural.
That's right. That's right.
It actually takes an awful lot of energy to become angry and hateful and mean. It takes an extraordinary amount of thought and focus to be mean. Well, think about it. I want everyone to just think about that. If you're in a grocery store, you're in a bank, you're at the movies, you're at an open market, doesn't it take more effort to be PO'd at everyone than it does just to at least be, if nothing else, neutral?
Yeah,
neutrality takes no energy.
Yeah.
And it takes less energy to smile than it does to give somebody a negative look. And when we become angry, it's a consumable energy. In other words, a person doesn't stay angry 24/7. Very few people can withhold that because the body can't actually withstand that. That's an energetic that raises the blood. It does all kinds of really weird things to the body when you're in a high state of anger. Cause people to stroke out even. How many people do you know that stroke out because they've been smiling too much? Or because they've given too many hugs for the day?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean, think about the logic behind what this is. The logic is that if it takes energy, effort, and focus to be one way, then it probably isn't natural.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I saw it in myself, and gradually I've kind of tuned out of the whole thing. But this, the whole idea of competitiveness, of competition, is not healthy, because everybody says, oh yeah, healthy competition. Oh, well, they do over here. But
what is healthy competition?
Yeah, I don't think competition is at all healthy. Okay, so what's the whole deal about, you know, because a lot of people say, well, you know, shouldn't we improve ourselves? Yeah. Yeah, we should improve ourselves, but we should improve ourselves from the inside out first, at least as much as that we have a good heart, that we treat each other with kindness and virtue. Call me old-fashioned. Call me pre-fall.
There you go.
You know?
Well, you know, let's talk about competition for a minute. You know, and I have to agree with you. It actually, you know, I used to be a sports fanatic. I ran track. I played basketball. I played baseball, softball, football, cheerleading, everything. I mean, I was extremely active, and it was very, very competitive. However, and I've strolled back through my mind and looking at it, I actually was never in competition with anyone else. I was actually in competition with myself. I never looked at, I want to beat her. I want to win her over her or him. It was, I just wanted to play my best. And the whole idea behind winning and losing is really a sad thing, but it is also part of duality. Now, we got to understand that if you have a winner, you got to have a loser or vice versa. But what happened to just playing a game for the sake of playing the game, getting some exercise, sharing some time, having some fun, honing your skills of jumping, running, bouncing a ball, swinging a bat, whatever it may be.
Hunting skills.
What about that? Just having fun with it. Just honing your skills or staying in top form. If that's what you're so inclined to do. But no, we got to keep score. We got to keep track. And then when somebody wins over somebody else, we got to rub it in. And the loser's got to be mad because they've been cheated. You see? So the whole idea behind sports and paying these people an astronomical amount of money to get out on a playing field to bounce a ball or throw a ball around or hit a ball with a bat, it just makes me scratch my head. It makes me scratch my head. Whereas the common person, the person that keeps the lights on, that keeps your drains clear, that keeps your streets clean, things like that, that matter to everyday life, is at the bottom of the totem pole. Something's upside down about that, isn't it?
And I'm not
saying that sports people don't work hard for their money, but millions upon millions upon millions of dollars a year, and they play 6 months out of the year, 3 months out of the year, whatever the particular season is. It's amazing to me how we idolize people in those, I guess, genres, whether we're talking about sports or we're talking about movie stars or what have you, that they're held in the highest esteems. But the people that keep us with food, water, lights, clean, clean streets, safe streets, whatever you want to call it, that, you know, everyone like us, right, that we're out there doing our part, so to speak, and that it's just expected. And if you're lucky, you get minimum wage for it. Or you get a meager living to where you can maybe afford to keep a roof over your head. There's something not balanced there.
It's the bizarro world.
It is.
And
they think people like you and me are strange. And I look at them and I go, wow, really?
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember the book Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein, Robert A. Heinlein.
Yes.
And it's about a kid who was brought up on Mars and then brought back. He sees the world from an adult's perspective, but from a different way of looking at things. You know, it's very much like that Alex Collier view of the world. You know, why do you have to pay to live on a world that you were born on? You know, that kind of attitude. It really takes you off the surface. Now, talking of off the surface and under the surface, I'm going to bring William in because he's finally arrived online. William Stillings, wow. Good afternoon.
Hello, JP.
Hello.
We're on the air. I'm so sorry they would not let me log in.
Oh.
Nothing. Reboot, different platform. When I got the different platform up, the internet went down, just oddly.
Wow. We're just going to talk about science and what they didn't teach us at school. What could be wrong with that?
Really? I mean, if we're not talking about congressmen and senators, for God's sake.
Yeah. So, may I introduce to you Rebecca Jernigan, William Stillings.
Hello, William. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm just absolutely marvelous on this Sunday afternoon, at least where I'm at.
Where are you at?
I'm in the heartland of the United States, in the Kansas City area.
Ooh, that's beautiful. You're probably having a good weather day today, actually.
It's actually very delightful, thank you.
Wow.
Awesome. Thank you.
So basically, I've been, we've been talking in the last few days, William, about the kind of the seam of the gap between what we're told and what really is. We've been talking about that in terms of the medical world, medicine and healing and things like that in the last hour. What else have we touched on, Rebecca?
Oh, my. We've talked about, besides medicine, about the original blueprint of the human, how we're actually supposed to have been here. We've talked a lot about the different ways that people live, and the idea that of the kind of false personalities that we all have. You know, kind of the whole programming kind of idea of it. Goodness, we just talked about tons of it, didn't we, JP?
Oh, we've gone right there. So,
I think I'm the poster child for slightly adaptive social personas. I mean, I can be. It's inherent. I mean, that's just an all out necessity, really, and a pre programmed one. at that. Yeah, they don't tell you that that it's possible to regrow limbs, hands, everything. That all the DNA is present in the body. All you need is a binder and a filler, you know. And you know, regrow half a heart or a rib section back, hands, complete with everything, fingerprints, everything. No pun intended, Prometheus, but livers.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah. You know, if damaged beyond, it's hard to keep. It's hard to do a heart muscle that's continually moving, but and you have to keep it moist. But we've all heard that rumor, and this is very true. Third layer pig bladder, ground up, and kept on a wound. You put distilled water, keep it moist, and people can regrow hands.
Wow.
Fingers for thin. It's fact. It's just fact.
Okay, so I'm going to interject, if you don't mind, JP, and ask a question of William. And I've heard that. And a matter of fact, there's somewhere in my musings that I've been told the same thing, that you can regrow. You can regrow your teeth. If broken bones, and it stands to reason, if broken bones can mend, and teeth are very similar to bones, right? They're made of the same kind of stuff. Elements. So how can one go about regrowing, teeth or a limb? What is it that they're not telling us? What do we need to do in order to do that?
Well, for teeth, the most viable is fetus implants. Donor implants. Well, donor, probably. I wouldn't doubt it, but you need a starter.
All right.
So it's just basically that would boil down to taking an ungrown secondary tooth coming in or the next layer of teeth coming in from say a child or a donor, and implanting that. And I actually have a few. I have one broke. I have one actually that was done. It took about 3 good years to look a little bit smaller than the rest of the teeth and eventually filled in. And I know I lost that tooth. I know I lost it. I remember it breaking. I remember the pain about a week later. And, got a small infection, a little bit of pain, no big deal. Infected again. Turned out it wasn't an infection, but it was a tooth growing, and that given me don't know how, round vehicle courtesy thing. It was on the left side, so it might have been very important for an implant or pre-existing implant or an implant that had to be replaced. I was weakened during that time, during that transition in my life in 93, 94, but. I'm one personal experience on that I can comment on.
Whoa, nice one. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to take a break because we'll try and maximize our time here, William. But because I've got to hand the stream back at 5, so Dave can do another show. Let me just take a very brief break, 1 minute break, and we'll be right back.
This is Wolf Spirit Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, 1. We have liftoff.
On Sunday, the 11th of November, 2012, I am greatly honored to welcome Alex Collier to Ever Beyond on everbeyond.info and wolfspiritradio.com. We will be discussing his upcoming movie project, Captain Dinar, and science fiction films in general. Also, some new information regarding crop circles and the return of the Earth grid system. Please have your questions ready in the chat room at Wolf Spirit Radio or everbeyond.info. Please join us next Sunday, 11 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. PST, on Ever Beyond.
Yes, and this is Ever Beyond, and a victim of DST, or was it Alphabet? Alphabet soup, whatever. But anyway, we've got an hour of the, how can I put this, the outstanding, he's outstanding in the street, I don't know why, William Stillings. Thank you very much for making it, and let's get down to it. We're taught loads of stuff at school, and yet we see round vehicles in the sky. We see plasma objects zipping around. We see science fiction films with all this stuff, time tunnels and all that stuff. But our physicists say, well, according to these laws, that's not true. Have they been lying to us? Tell me they're not lying to us, William.
Oh, I would have to say that a majority isn't, but a lot are. And it's either they don't know, you know, in school. And growing up in school, a lot of people knew. A lot of people knew a lot of things, which was very important for development and very grateful for. But mainstream science now, a lot of the teachers in the higher end schools are lying. And you really don't get there unless you're agency or you go to MIT. And round vehicles floating in the sky, everything is a wave. Gravity is a wave, and when I make I've learned how to make gravity lenses out of bismuth and glass. I've got a very, very interesting John Hutchison aligning on Prince, or like, you know, much kind of a controlled World Trade Center line bismuth. To introduce it to the silica, and you do have to heat up the silica, and you know bismuth has a low boiling point, basically. So, there's a way.
Sorry, William, you got broken up a bit when you were talking about some of the details that you were just talking about. I think that there always seems to be this kind of recurrent cycle every few minutes that your speech gets chopped up, but. You know, whether that's natural causes or unnatural causes. So you were saying before you got broken up that you were able to make gravity lenses out of bismuth and silica.
Yeah.
Is that something you did in your bedroom? What's the deal? You know,
no,
what kind
no,
of equipment do you need for this?
Most of it is still not done yet. But basically what I did build, which was expensive, was a inductive oven for tuned for silica, which isn't the easiest thing in the world or the cheapest to do. I mean, there's a lot other easier elements that don't use as expensive parts, you know, when tuning it for. But tops and bottoms.
Right, you know how I have to interrupt you and nail you down to define what you're just talking about, because I can't go on unless, you know, I know what you're talking about, and neither can everybody else, but that's fine. If you're talking an inductive oven, is that like a microwave oven, but able to be tuned to specific frequencies so that you can zing up some, turn something to, is this like Hutchinson system?
Well, it's basically a coil, and you're putting out a frequency, and you're tuning it to a specific target or element, and you're just moving a lot faster, and it'll naturally heat up for very little amount of energy, like 300-400 or, you know, 1,000 watts. We'll turn it molten, you know, do so in about 15 seconds. I mean, it's just the way to really do things. In fact, we really shouldn't nuke food. We should really inductively heat it, honestly.
What kind of frequency?
Well, sodium is 13.56 megahertz. Silica is, there's a couple ways of doing it. For the people out there, because I get copied so much, I'm not going to be exact. But, you know, aluminum, copper's easy to melt. Aluminum's a little harder. Beryllium's really hard. And silica is, I consider it more expensive and harder to do than beryllium, really. Hmm. To tune it for. I mean, it just, the parts get very large and expensive.
Is that because it's got a very, very high frequency, like UHF or something?
It's not scaled like that. It's just sort of yes, but no. It's both. It's a both yes and no answer. Mm-hmm. The tops and bottoms around vehicles are basically plastic or glass and have to be by nature. I mean, you're not going to put an EM non-EM effect through metal. And, in principle, round vehicle, gray round vehicles are so high technology, they're basically doing that. But, the older styles is basically the sunglasses lens was that the atoms aren't technically touching. No matter how thin you take a piece of metal or non-metal, you take a piece of metal, not non-metal, that's not right, but you take a piece of metal and you cut it one atom thick, but if they're touching, you will not see through it.
Right.
All right? So in that location where the mounds are, those gravity lenses on the vehicles, are basically, they're layered like sunglasses. The older style ones, and they're putting a gravity wave through it, and they're doing a repulsive gravity off of Earth when they're near Earth. And as Bob Lazar said, it's basically floating in the sea like a boat. And they bounce around quite a bit, and they have an appearance of instability, and they are kind of unstable if you simulate a unification of that, and round vehicles can drop out of the sky and hit the ground.
And that's how they discovered how to make them, isn't it? By accidentally allowing a couple to fall out of the sky somehow.
Using
radars or something.
That there is a truth in that, but a lot of the teleportation and time travel technology came from Tesla. Enhanced on, whatever somebody found whatever round vehicle and utilized a function out of it or discovered a principle out of it and utilized. A gravity will focus inversely like light. If you have a lens and you put light through it, and the light spreads out, gravity will bend inwards, will inversely bend.
Uh-huh.
And, there's a specific shape to where you have to do very, where you can do very minimal, actions. And I found a way, thinking it through for about the last, 5 years, doing the Hutchison effect of, basically just taking a tube, a metal tube, and on the Hutchison principle of being able to bend it without having any joints or anything in there, and just being able to bend it around on frequency without ever incurring metal fatigue or anything.
So they kind of, you're basically tuning in to each of the or to the atoms specifically and causing them to jiggle around a little bit and allow them to be more flexible with each other rather than the solid kind of crystalline. You're turning it into a wave, aren't you?
Yeah.
This is it.
You're bouncing a wave. You can tune a gravity through, and you could pipe it.
Can you tune inductive?
Yeah. It's the atoms and whatever material that you use basically are a motor generator. All atoms are. They're over unity device. All atoms, connected to a time domain and to a conscious observance. People ask, is it an observable universe or a fixed universe? And it's both. We make material real, and it's a fixed universe, and there's a time domain interaction that makes matter real. Why does light have mass? Is because it's tied to a time domain, and that time energy to mass event gives it mass. light is a wave, but yet it has mass because it is random.
All right. Okay. Now here's again. Now last time you were on, I said, okay, William, you've used this term a couple of times. What in heaven's name is a time domain?
It's a termed as the fourth dimension, is where time resides, where all energy or where creation came from, where all energy comes from, all matter. In order to create, you have to have a time domain, so you have to have a fourth dimension to be able to create. As spirits, we reside in the fifth and seventh, and some in the ninth. And there's 13 domains. Time domain is an energy to mass conversion, or a interactive conversion, I would call it, I guess. You have energy from that time domain, and that energy can become mass. We've seen it at World Trade Center where a scalar device was used, a crossover section, and in that pure electromagnetic crossover section, there was a transference where that World Trade Center steel, the iron, got sent back to a time domain and just disappeared. And the rest of the powder that we saw was actually the nickel, the element 28, and the carbon, element 6. Those rotors, those even numbered elements, remained behind, and that was the very minimal powder that we saw.
So this is what you're talking about when you're talking about oscillators and rotors. An atom, according to its structure, which is according to its number, its geometry, and its level of energy, determines what kind of atom it is, and it vibrates at a frequency that is also related to the atomic number. But basically, the number is the atomic number, not the atomic weight, but the atomic number. If it's, I'm going to get it wrong again. If it's odd, it's a rotor, and if
it's an oscillator.
Oh, there you bang it! See, I told you I'd get it wrong.
Odd oscillator.
Yeah. Even rotor. Okay, so...
Yeah, and this is actually the technology and the genius of John Searle.
Right, so tell us a little about how Searle discovered this stuff.
John Searle discovered it because he discovered it, just like I discovered a lot of things about myself, about physics and everything, and also from experience.
Yeah, but I mean, was he messing about with stuff, or did he have a kind of university?
John Searle was building round vehicle technology, gravity generators, the John Searle SCG, which mimics a proton, or the proton energy position level of 12, 22, 32, and is a over unity device. Is a converter. Is a inverter. Basically, you can plug DC in, and it spins 10 times a second on the rollers, and that's 60 hertz, and you can get AC out. It'll float in the air. In fact, he has to go to special modifications to keep it on the ground, literally. Otherwise, it'll just take off and just keep going through space until it hits something.
Right. Hang on a second. There is a dawning that is happening. I see a little glimmer of light coming over the horizon, a little beam, and I think I'm getting it. He built a machine that was a model of an atom, a working model of an atom. Atom?
A geometrically stable element, bismuth. It's quite a bit more to the technology than this, but the geometrically stable islands of geometrically stable elements are antimony, bismuth, Bob Lazar's element 115, 184 neutrons, mass 299, element 147, mass 405, which I've termed kind of Stilling Zinnium.
You got your own element. Yeah. Now that's uber geek, isn't it, to have your own element?
Yeah, yeah. It's Never mind that this was slapped on the front of the hulls of submarines and used as a boundary layer effect to lower resistance, which is why we have submarines in the Navy fleet that can do an excess of 300 miles an hour as a submerged hull. Which,
right, hang on a second. All right, you just said that really quickly. I'm going to rewind that back for our listening audience. What you're talking about is using an element, a particular element, by having the front, the bow of the submarine is coated with this element, or there's a slug of it at the front, and this creates an effect that rips apart the water in front of it. A boundary layer? What is a boundary layer? What's a boundary layer do?
All right, whenever you produce a gravity, gravity is inherent, as we said before, in all time travel technology, teleportation technology, around vehicles, the Earth, the gravity generator, qualify it such as a mass and a revolving mass, is a motor generator. What happens with this element is when you run a gravity generator behind it, it is naturally geometrically tuned and will oscillate as gravity is inherent in all matter. It is in every proton as defined by as all matter. And the way you oscillate it, it determines as t- or the what you do with it as a over-unit device, or what element you use more specifically, is very determines how that gravity propagates outwards. And gravity tends to go towards the electron shell, just as if Earth was hollow and had a gravity generator in the center that went out in 2008, then it would propagate out towards what would the crust of the Earth be mimicked as the electron shell. As we heard of Brooks Agnew, that the Earth, that he suspects the Earth is hollow, the Earth is hollow. You know, how can the Earth shrink and expand? You can't compress a solid.
Mm. That's right. It's a bauble.
Yeah.
It's like a Christmas decoration. So,
yeah.
So, one of the things about various of these technologies that we've been exposed to through Project Camelot and various other whistleblowers is the idea of this three ring situation. You know, the film Contact had this machine that had three rings that, that rotated in different dimension, you know, on a different plane.
Yeah, reflection.
On gimbals and things like that. I have a little thing that somebody gave me. I love things on gimbals. It's brilliant. But anyway, this is something to do with the structure of the atom, isn't it?
Yes, everything is a wave. All matter is a wave. When we were teleporting, out of Silmar to the desert, to the Midwest, which you still are not allowed to ask about the Midwest because I'm inarguably on constraints legally mm-hmm. to that. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I was going out towards the Midwest teleporting. It would take about half a second to teleport out to the Midwest. The desert was about a quarter second. Everything is a wave. In the act of teleporting, it is just converted more into a wave. You're technically, but not, but are in a more massless state of travel, which you are, but, this is just the teleporting, the way that was done in this form of teleportation is just a little bit different. That is there. You are in a massless state, but there's some differences that I'm not too talented on the physics to be able to say it. I know what it is. So just, when I see it and understand, I just can't describe it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll turn into an extremely long interview and I'll say basically nothing. And you'll be like, Brett, William, shut up. Please. Shut up. Let's go back.
Yeah. Let's go back. So here's the thing, right? Okay. So in Star Trek, let's go to the science fiction. In Star Trek, when they had a teleport device, they would break you up into atoms, turn you into data, send you as a data stream, and blah, 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 blah. And that would make you die, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would kill. Yeah. You don't stop the wave. One of the very scary things about teleporting is that first transition being converted into a wave is the most critical. And if a power drop off, it's bad. Everything is a wave. Nothing is broken down. If it's broken down, that dies. Everything is kept into a wave and must be sustained in a wave. It's a wave action. It's a wave form. It's you're being basically you know, as in a higher energy state, you would be more towards the ultraviolet. Ultraviolet goes faster than the speed of light because it's in a higher energy state and is more massless. People, you know, if people more massless, yeah, I'm going to say more massless because it's just easier. Yeah. If they want to give me a scientific term, yeah, which is supposed to be in place that they haven't, then they can bitch at me. Till then, more massless state. Thank you. Harvard, MIT, Harvard. Sorry. I'm going off.
Do you need a break?
No. That was my little mental vacation right there. rant. I'm just going to go off. Yeah, you're just converted into a higher energy state and for a more massive state of travel.
Right.
I was in 81. I was getting to Mars in 18 minutes. I did a couple other trips in 82 and stuff, and that was like just under 15 minutes.
Right. Okay, so Brett, how do we get there? How do we know? You know, they got some sort of thing that they twiddle. That is it, like a vector and a distance? Is it just that simple?
A vector and a distance.
That you know, you go in a direction, and they know that this point on the surface of the Earth is going to be this exact vector.
Well,
you know,
sort of. Andrew Bishago was doing some incredibly experimental, gutsy, risky forms of teleportation. There are 8 forms of teleportation.
Wow, 8 divine forms. Okay.
Yep. There are 8 different forms. Andrew Bishago was doing some very risky teleportation where he was teleporting, and he and some other kids were teleporting without receiver units on the other end. And very ballsy. And I mean...
Yeah, well, he's got a first ray. This is the thing. Andrew is a 1-2-1. And a very rare being that is.
Ooh, well, that's all right.
And it just shows you know,
125.
You're 125, yeah. Rebecca is 123, as am I.
Ooh, oh wow, you guys congeal.
Yeah,
you just you all just bounce off the indifference.
Yes,
yeah. Basically. I hear Rebecca.
You get it.
Wow, it's that's amazing. I still contend.
You're 739. No.
Well, let's go a little bit into the. You know, I was born December 22nd, 1966.
Mm-hmm.
Back east.
Oh, a fire horse.
Hold on. Yeah. Back east at 1:16 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
All right, in Portsmouth, Virginia. Now, they changed it. Originally, I was born Sagittarius. They changed it in 1974 where they made Capricorn December 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
And funny things was back east, 3-hour difference, California, blah, blah, blah. It's pretty interesting. But,
Well, certainly, you know, in terms of star signs, you know, you've got that kind of Sagittarian flamboyance, but still that kind of the Capricornian, you know, dogness to be able to carry a project like some of the things that you've been talking about through to the end, you know, like things that take incredible amounts of patience.
I'm temperamentally funny, and I'm good with money. I can make reasonable decisions if I'm... you know, it's just the, you know, it's just that one little glitch thing where, oh, you got to put on the parachute before you jump. Yeah, but on the way down, I'd be really organized to pull the ripcord if it was there. All right.
I think Rebecca liked that definition.
Did you?
I did. I like people who are down to earth, man.
I'm right here. But yeah, let's go to the physics. Is that the over unity device, or as any atom is, as John Searle very correctly in every way, shape, and form for over 50 years has pointed out, that basically gravity is inherent in all matter. As John Searle and the genius of John Searle has defined that, for building a gravity generator, it has to start with element 60 or over. The SEG is a quantum state 4312 device. The Duropa stones that were found in the cave in China back in 1937-38.
With this strange race of people who don't look like they come from around here.
Yeah, sure. they're intermixed. Mm-hmm. I don't know or have a clue as to, but they're definitely more evolved and developed than anyone from LA. And basically, those Duropa stones, 728 or 716 Duropa stones, were found in a cave, and that was actually a quantum state 1234 device gravity generator from a crashed vehicle. It was a amalgamated mercury lithium 6 device, had a bismuth dielectric center, or not center, but layer. Actually looks like a powderized green concrete, compact. It's actually something I know that because I attempted to make a dielectric material using bismuth, and actually comes out like looks like green concrete. And I'm actually very talented. Very talented.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I go.
And I've come up some very novel, I was asking John, before he started selling off his lab and everything, if he could do the knife into wood or aluminum massless state introduction. And I had an idea, and I had a really, really good idea. And, I said, I told him the elements that I wanted the compound. I said, can you tune it for this? And he loves to play around, which is great. And it was like me. So it was basically, it just boiled down to a hands-on experiment, cause and effect and learn, which is the best way of doing things, honestly. I make tons of mistakes, and that's the best way to do it. I wanted to do a tune it and shape it on frequency, basically cut it on frequency, get it down to two atoms thick uniformity, introduce it into another element as done the same, and make one spinning disc that, you could pretty much guess amalgamated mercury lithium 6. And spin it very, very fast, like 160,000 RPMs, and make a single gravity generator. Don't want to do plasma. Don't want to do this. Don't want to do that. Just kind of want to do a self-sustaining spinning disc that wouldn't fly apart, that in that transition to holding itself together when the effect is there are transitions and cancellations and stuff and at a de-energized state or whatever, or drop down section to, or going over to another energy level is, that's when the device has a tendency to crap apart, or could,
So basically, you're talking about creating what did they call them? An aggregate material? No, not aggregate. I forgot the word for it, where you combine very closely various layers, and then what you're talking about, by making them massless, you then push them all together so that you interfuse two things, is that, or more than two things?
Basically.
Yeah? No, so that you then...
It's basically...
You're forming atoms. Go on,
yes.
Sorry. So you're forming a disk of atoms, each of which is behaving like a gravity generator, so you have basically a gravity generator that you could hold in your pocket. How would you control it?
It has the potential. All atoms are over unity device. Some decay a little bit quicker than others. You know, you have geometrically stable islands where they're geometrically stable. They just last forever and forever minus 0.00997 seconds long. You know, billions and billions of years. You know, bismuth, Bob Lazar's element 115, element 147, element 179, 211, 243, 275, 307. And, we're only taught that we have 120 elements in the periodic table. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy at all. It's just a geometrically phased gravity, that we're in a phased gravity to live, technically we should be living a couple hundred years, 300 years. Our phase of gravity, we typically, live to the hundreds, lucky.
Phased gravity. Hang on a second. Yeah. Because this is very connected with what Rebecca and I speak about a lot, and you use this term phased gravity, but you're talking about things that are influencing the human race, aren't you? You're talking the beam from They Live.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about how much can you tell us about phased gravity generators and where they may operate out of, and what sort of effects they have, and can you wear a tinfoil hat? All right.
I'd wear a copper one if need be.
A copper one, there you go.
A proper oscillator, element 13, element 29, better. Uh-huh. Eddy currents, much better. I'm getting an echo back.
Yeah, sorry.
Keep going. I can hear my own voice. Oh, there we go. There. Awesome. All right. We're all tuned to a gravity. First of all, I've said, NASA will never find the answer to the bone problem in space, because there is none. They might delay it a couple weeks, whatever. But they will never, 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 never find the bone problem to space. The answer is the John Searle answer. You take gravity with you. That is what most black aircraft, that is what the new shuttle is. It has a gravity generator. It'll fly flat bottom wise to other planets, as it's been said that it might have the potential to be interplanetary. Damn right it will be. It's going to have a freaking gravity generator in it. Question isn't how they got off the, or that they went to the moon, it's how they got off the moon. Blew that one. We are away. Even by science standards that we can call on and count on, is that the mind brain operates between 7 and 11 hertz, correct?
Something like that.
All right.
When we're sleeping, they say.
Well, yeah. 7 to 11. Lower. 7, 8 hertz when at peace, 9, 10 when agitated. Or there's side frequencies too, but gravity is not a frequency, but it does have a carrier wave of 0.4 hertz, 7.5, around there. We're not going to be specific.
Is that also to do with like a particular German scientist's name? Had a wave. Maybe. All right. Anyway, so do go on. So there are gravity generators located somewhere?
Well, we are a gravity generator as well. I mean, our thoughts propagate on a gravity wave because we generate.
Because, yeah.
Our thoughts operate between 7 and 11 hertz. A gravity wave operates between, you know, 7 and 10, 11 hertz. Propagates has a low carrier wave. You look in the Bible and stuff, just the basic teachings. As the Lord said, your thoughts are instant. I hear you instantly. It's a physics lesson. Basically, it's a physics book, and it's a discussion between three entities having a physics discussion where one kind of trailed off. And they're talking basically physics, that gravity propagates instantly from here to a million light years away. And its propagation, gravity will more or less get there instantly. You know, we were teleporting, took 18 minutes to Mars, took 14 minutes, took 10 minutes, took 8 minutes. 6 months ago, I believe Mars was 4 minutes away. In 1984, we could have 4 or 5 people in the jump room to Mars, you know, comfortably, you know, without running out of air and dying. That was, one of the gratuitous aspects of, why 84 was just so awesome.
Because Mars was close. So what you're saying is that there's like a finite amount of oxygen in the jump room, so it can only go as far as and take as long as air would run out. Which is why do they try and pressurize the air? You say there was a fan that blows down onto you, very strong.
They would force air in to force in the freshest air possible.
Yeah.
You know, the elevator, the teleporter was only a certain size, and you have to push air through, and you can only go as far as the jump room is big, you know, as the teleporter is big.
Right. Is there a coil somewhere? Is this thing surrounded by Tesla coils? You know how the thing worked?
Well, yeah, it's a Tesla technology.
Right.
Is definitely a Tesla technology.
And it would move through space as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we were traversing distance. Time is indistinguishable from distance. We were going from, you know, from point A to point B. And, you know, there is true instant teleportation. That was not what we were doing. You know, we were going in a massless state or near, very, very near massless state. You know, we were approaching, you know, speed of light. And that is by very much true by definition. That is very true. You know, going 97% speed of light.
Mm. But did that also mean that you were your atoms were made more distant so that you could travel through?
You're in a wave. You're in a wave.
Yeah.
Your material is converted into a wave and can only be in the act of teleport.
Say that again. Your material is converted into a wave, and you can only what?
You're really no longer atoms. You're converted into a waveform. I mean, you're a wave. When you're teleporting, you are converted into a wave. If you're not, then you end up in different places, multiply at the same time.
All right, and that's not the best experience.
I was using the beautiful equipment. But by today's standards, you know, we were having to mechanically, by running, having to traverse distance. The jump room in El Segundo was great because it traversed distance for you in the act of moving.
Ah.
Yeah.
This is the whole 1 meter per second thing. So you would go in at 1 meter per second. So this is another form of teleportation. You go through a gateway, like a portal. And because they only had a certain amount of size at the time, you guys were kids. You were much smaller than you were.
That law stays in place no matter what for all teleporters. It's just how it does it for you. You can stand still, and that will, you know, and some teleporters will traverse the distance for you in the wave action, you know, time the distance and stuff.
Mm.
You know, it's, you know, there's some very advanced, you know, technology now to where, you know, that you didn't have that you didn't have to traverse the distance and risk an accident.
Right.
Yeah, by law, exactly. By law, we had to exceed faster than 1 meter per second in the act of running through the teleporter to traverse that distance law. You know, and one of the very early trainings that I did was keeping my hands in front of me crossed over my chest. And, you know, if in the act of jogging, you threw your hand back at some less than 1 meter per second, you weren't going to have your hand on the end of the trip.
Yeah, because your hand, when you swing it back, it loses the speed and you lose bits of your hand. That sounds,
yeah.
So,
That
is it like your
fear?
I'm sure it was.
Even in teleporting, people had a natural instinct of standing kind of isolated, you know, apart from others.
Mm.
You know, I found out just by cause and effect that I could bounce my left hand off the wall of the teleporter when I was in waveform, when it was kind of a purplish pink, kind of swirling. When the room became a cylinder, rounded out, and the door in front disappeared, just became very uniform.
Hmm.
And it was all right to do so because you no longer really have the floor beneath you that you could see really. It's there, you can feel it. It just, you can kind of get disoriented or lose balance, and I had to push off the wall and did so. So it was apparently all right. But there was a natural tendency that people stood isolated, and when the teleporter goes, you get very calm.
Mm.
When the teleporter ends, you get very anxious. And, you know, we are tuned to a gravity, and standing or meditating in front of a gravity generator is very, very pleasant. It's just you kind of inductively feel drained, but very much at peace. And it's very healthy. You know, it tells the body, you know, where it's at, or, you know, the body forgets. And that gravity wave reminds the body where it's at.
This is something I remember when you were speaking to Muggsy a few months ago, and she was pressing you. What does it feel like to go through the teleport machine? And you can go back on Wolf Spirit Radio archives. We've got all these interviews, fascinating stuff. And you said that it's a very calibrating experience.
Yes. Yeah, it very much is.
Could you explain, or rather, you know, how was it for you?
It was very centering, calibrating. You're going to teleport, you know, you prep yourself to be in full motion, basically, mentally and spiritually, emotionally, when you teleport.
Hmm.
And discomfort is a time-based emotion, honestly. It's maybe a confliction and indifference, and not necessarily positive, not necessarily negative, but it is an indifference. And that time kind of gets laundered out. But when teleporting, done in that fashion, there isn't really a gain. Time will, that traversing will get laundered onto you, whether you want it to or not. And getting adjusted around was a very positive, emotional and physical, positive an experience that all those discomfort, uncomfortable feelings will launder out. Things will move. A rolling rock gathers no moss.
Yeah. So it forces you into the now moment. Is that right?
Yes, very much so.
How interesting. So it's like you're ascended.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we were talking about before. About
cleanse, basically. My you know, my health aspect and my attentiveness, my spiritual clarity, everything very much cleared up. And I mean, phenomenal. You know, at a point of talking to the gray or being with the gray,
mm.
You know, just interacting or working with, you know, absolutely love it and prefer it and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And you want to meditate. Is do so in front of a gravity generator, really. You know, tinfoil hats, it's actually, you know, you actually want to use an oscillator, and you actually want to do a three-ply if you want to block things out. You would use nickel, copper, and iron or steel. And you could, you know,
hang on, let's, you know, let's just go past the, let's roll back a second. Nickel, copper, and steel. Which one's the, which one's odd and which one's even?
Oscillator for nickel, if doing blocking things, it'd typically be a rotor oscillator. But it is,
wow,
you know,
is this like the I Ching? Rotor oscillator.
Yeah, iron's technically a non-quantum state element. It is and isn't, but it technically isn't. And so it can perform, oddly enough, as both. Not divisible by four, but it has weird principles to it. It's like, you know, it's like the reduced of elements. Eventually break down to iron. Blah blah blah.
That's what they say, is that stars fill up with iron because that's like the waste product. Or everything's stability. Anyway, so you got iron.
It's also ironically what disappeared at the World Trade Center.
Ironically. Very triple entendre there. Iron disappears because it's an oscillator.
It's technically a rotor, but it's also a non-quantum state element.
Does that mean that it has no isotopes? Does that mean it has no isotopes?
No.
What does non-quantum state mean? Sorry.
That's going to be lengthy.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. We'll leave it at that. We'll talk non-quantum state another time. Because we're about 10 minutes out.
It's too long to go into.
Yeah.
But anyways, every element, an isotope has its own frequency. However many isotopes of bismuth or tin or antimony or copper, every isotope has its own frequency. So getting that proverbial 100% pure element based on the John Hutchison effect or the scalar weapon that's out between the Philippines and Guam's on that little island that just happens to be 0.81 kilometers apart from the secondary, electromagnetic time attached coil.
810 meters, huh? Yeah.
Sorry. American. I still talking about metric system.
it's all right, but we can relate. So you've got this, gravity generator that, okay, so... Where do we go to? I mean, because I was asking you about the copper hat, right? I got a copper hat.
Tinfoil hats, jokes, sir. Yeah,
but that goes back to the negative, and we could call it negative. I don't know what you'd call it. The controlling matrix generators that are created by phased gravity. Is that what you were saying? Is that what puts people slightly off their tune? Is that like 440?
People put people off their tune. the universe, multiverse functions because that is in the right. And that wave is in the right. People are a good thing, but are the indifference. You know, we're very unique as individuals in the universe, multiverse, or whatever, is that we are one of the very few beings in the world that are actually an even-numbered element, which is most life in the universe or whatever, same universe, multiverse, the universe, because we're actually smart and we simplify it to... a very undeniable basic.
Most beings in the universe.
Ooh, what's this contact request for Becca? Hold on, Rebecca.
I don't know her. I don't know her. I promise. I don't know her.
Because all the pretty much the majority of the life in the universe is actually oscillator or odd numbered element based life form. We're the exception. I mean, really, one of three species. Besides the life on planet, this location is really the exception. It really is. We really are. I mean, grays are odd numbered element based, and there's a vicious life form that's actually, and ironically, Star Trek got it backwards once again. They depicted that silica based life form. They depicted that silica based life form as slow moving. It's actually small and very, very fast moving and very predatorial and very vicious. Will eat your face off. It is.
Don't touch the cube.
Oh! It is. It is vicious. And I mean,
we'll have to talk to William about the cube.
We're going to have to talk to William about the cube. We've got 6 minutes. Oh, 3 minutes now.
Stay off the Venus people.
They're from Venus.
So it said. I have no clue. Hadn't been there, but somebody who I know for a fact, even rotor number. Sorry, I'm a retard. I went dyslexic on you, and I did this before too.
I get it all backwards as well. It's all right. Look, yeah. we're all going to get this one day. By listening to these shows over and over again, we will know what is an oscillator, what is a rotor, how it relates to how atoms work together, and presumably valency, and all those funky things that they taught us in chemistry. But really what you've taught us, William, tonight, is that the basic two kind of atoms, and that by combining these different elements in these ways, you can produce different kinds of effects. And the black scientists know this. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
And what do they call this science?
Well, there's actually a kind of a modified proton energy position level chart that's actually used in industry. And, you know, this is used out at spin 1, spin 2, spin 3, or S1, S2, S3, S4, and Area 51. And it's the indifference. It basically goes to the tune of the proton energy position level of a geometrically stable element. And that, you know, say bismuth, element 83, and that has 2, 6, 12, 8, 22, 32, 1 protons. And the chart goes to the indifference of arriving at that proton energy position level. So, you know, 2 protons in an energy shell, you have helium.
1 minute.
And it goes to, two, and then the eighth element, oxygen, helium, oxygen, element 20, calcium, element 28, nickel. So the difference between 28 nickel and 20 calcium, 8, and then it goes to 10 element 50, and a 22 in difference. And there's a chart that you go by for establishing certain very basic physics parameters to that tune. And, you know, it goes up to element 114, and that's for effect. And actually, 114 is where grab comes from, found nickels.
William,
yes.
I have to stop you there. Absolutely genius stuff. Everybody, listen to this stuff once again. We are just about out of time. Thank you so much for coming. You'll come back. I know you'll be back. You're raising our vibration talking about this stuff. This is really what it's about. Gravity is telepathy and all of this stuff. a levitation, all of these things we'll talk about, it's all about gravity. Thank you very much, William. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for filling in and keeping me company through the last, through the first hour and through the last hour too. It's been lovely having you both here. Thank you very much and good night. This is Ever Beyond.
Hi, this is Rebecca Jernigan. Join me and an impressive